Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to this podcast, season 6, episode 4. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm speaking to Jonathan Kuhlein in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there, kids. Good to see you all live and in the flesh.
That's what we call a brain fart. Someone live on TV or on YouTube, if you want to call it that. Alrighty, so fact check from last week. Even more groups of simian-type animals, but chimpanzees are also called a troop or also a community. Whereas when I looked up gorillas came up as troop, but also as band. So you can have a band of gorillas, or you could have gorillas the band, which isn't really a band. It's a couple of guys, right?
I thought a band was a band of brothers. I got that mixed up.
That's what, if they have guns and it's World War II or something. Oh. I don't know. I've never seen Band of Brothers, actually.
Yeah, two.
Huh?
World War II.
Okay, thanks. I thought you were going to say Band of Brothers 2, like the sequel. What?
Yes, Band of Brothers 2. We're back.
Yeah.
More bandy.
And last week I was talking about the C-3P model droids, but they're actually called 3PO series of droids. Then there are protocol droids, of which C-3PO is one of. That would mean that, you know, if you're using the letter C to designate that he's perhaps the third model of protocol droid, then they only could possibly have 36 because, you know, A to Z and then 0 to 9. I guess they double up the letters after a while. I don't know. Doesn't make any sense. And actually, one of our fans had a bit of a rant today on Slack about the Clone War name. So we'll have to come back to that one for sure.
The C-3PO stuff, though, I gotta chime in on this one. So if this is an official designation, you'd think this would be given out by the factory, right? Like the factory makes them, the factory gives them these designations. But didn't little Anakin make C-3PO? So how does he get to insert his random designation into this?
All right. All right, well, let's move on to our headlines. And first up is Jonathan, because he's the only other person here today.
First up and last up. Here we go. We'll start with some Star Wars news this week. We are obviously in a lovely spot right now where we've got Star Wars The Bad Batch going, and we've got Star Wars The Mandalorian going. But we got a little bit of, I can't tell if this is bad news or good news. I'll leave that to Tim in a minute, but there was a news this week on Variety.com that a couple of Star Wars projects that had previously been announced are officially toast. So the project that had been announced with Patty Jenkins directing the Rogue Squadron series has been scrapped. They're not going to do that movie. And there was talk that maybe that was going to be like a trilogy or something. Not happening. It has been canceled officially. They have also canceled the project they had announced previously involving Marvel executive producer and chief Kevin Feige, who was going to be doing a Star Wars project. That one is now canceled as well. So two movies that were announced previously are now off the schedule. The thing that they did say that they are continuing forward with is a film by Taika Waititi, which they had announced previously. He is still doing that. So that movie is still coming. And Rian Johnson said that he is still committed to doing his trilogy that he had previously been announced. And that was like 2017. That was ages ago. He said he was going to do a trilogy that was unrelated to all of the Star Wars Skywalker saga stuff. And he said he's going to continue producing that and working on that, even though he's been busily working away on other projects like Knives Out and Poker Face, the new TV show as well. So two things still going, two things canceled, but we've got a little bit of clarity on where we're going on the movie side of Star Wars for the time being.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, but didn't we establish last week that all Star Wars leads to the Emperor Palpatine in the Skywalker saga? Isn't that we that's canon, right?
Well, I said it must be true.
I heard it on the internet. I heard it on a podcast last week.
You heard it on a podcast? It must be true. Sure. Meanwhile, over at Bio9, Gizmodo. Jermaine Lussier wrote a story this week that says that at Star Wars Celebration Europe, which is coming up in about a month from now on April 7th, that there's a possibility there will be more announcements of new projects coming at that point. So that could be interesting. I think we'll keep the date circled on our news calendars to see if we get any announcements there. It sounds like they're kind of bringing, they alluded to it. They said they're bringing live action filmmakers to make announcements, joined by special guests. So maybe we'll get some actual Star Wars new movies as opposed to not just canceled movies.
Yeah. So do they ever like have animated filmmakers come and do announcements?
I think they've announced show stuff in the past. I don't know if they announced them at Europe or if that was just the one here in North America, but I do know that they've made those announcements at that kind of event. I'll be curious to see what they do on the movie front. Like, there hasn't been a movie since what was that waste of time called? Oh, Rise of Skywalker. That one was like so bad that Star Wars basically said that Lucasfilm, rather, working for Disney, said no more movies for a while. Let's figure out what we're doing wrong. Hmm. So they've done TV shows. The TV shows have been ranging from wildly successful like Mandalorian to amazing but unheralded like Andor. We've also got some really good cartoon series in the last few years. But the movie front is really quiet. And I'm really curious to see what they see as the future of Star Wars on the big screen as opposed to the small screen.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's interesting. Like you said, I think this whole streaming TV serialized longer format stories, notwithstanding the Mandalorian episode this week, which we could have done without. We'll get to that later. But, you know, like they tend to, you know, like you said, I think you said before, like it gives them time to sort of work on character development and story development and arcs, yeah. Right?
Yep.
That can span multiple, and, you know, and they kind of did it, like it was interesting the way they did Andor with the three episode sort of, you know, mini stories that made it one big giant story. That was kind of an interesting way of telling a story. And you know, I think even if you make it a 3.5 hour movie or even a 4 hour movie, it's still hard. Like, you know, I'm Justice League, I'm looking at you, but it doesn't give them enough space to really work out, you know, and bring you all that stuff in. Because if you think about it, you're sitting down for like that amount of time and you're trying to absorb this entire epic. Whereas, you know, the way they do it with the Disney stuff is they release it, maybe a couple of episodes, and then you have like a week to percolate and think about and ruminate, you know?
Yep. Yep.
And that gives you
it's a way to stay engaged in the conversation, right?
Yeah.
The one thing that's working for Star Wars on TV is a week after week, there's Mandalorian episodes. They do that for 8 weeks. And for 2 months, everybody's talking about Star Wars, which is what they want. If they do a movie, it's a flash in the pan. It's the Netflix problem, right? Netflix ends up with these, you know, everything drops in one day and we talk about it for, you know, a few days afterwards and then it goes away. Mm-hmm. I think it's a real challenge. And honestly, I don't envy the people who are responsible for the Lucasfilm film side to try and make any 2 hours matter in that way. Yeah. You know, Marvel's kind of got the right idea of how to use the television versus the movies the right way. But that being said, you and I later in this episode will be talking about Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. And, you know, it's hard. It's hard to make a story matter in 2 hours when you've spoiled your fans by giving them 10 hours.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's a different format. And you know, as we unravel the pandemic sort of thing, I don't know that they'll ever recapture people going back to the theaters. I mean, it's like, you know, if you look at all the other sort of paradigms have come along, and we had LPs, and everybody would go to the store and look at LPs and look at the album covers and, you know, think about them. And then we moved to CDs, and arguably better from a fidelity, like not so much from a fidelity point of view, but from a reliability point of view. I don't know how many records I had that skipped and really annoyed me because my favorite song would skip or whatever, right? Or there would be dust in that, you know, makes a permanently damages it, right?
Yeah.
You know, so CD was like a cleaner format and all that kind of stuff. And then we, from CDs, we went to MP3s. And then, like you said last week, when they had the Walkman in Last of Us, it was like, what is this technology that you talk of, you know, cassette tapes? What are those, you know? I mean, I didn't say it at the time, but it made perfect sense to me in a world where you have no rechargeable batteries. You know, I'm sure Ellie could find batteries and run her Walkman probably a lot easier than she could a CD player. Well, I guess you could use a CD player. Same thing.
I was going to say, I had a Discman that was perfectly fine. Yeah. By 2002, it was starting to wane. I think I already had my first iPod at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
When did the iPod come out? That was
2090. Oh, yeah. 2000s, I think. We talked about this on a show.
Yeah. Well, I can understand.
2007 was the iPhone. So the iPod was pretty much the king of the hill for about 4 years. So we can say early 2000s.
Yeah. So maybe they didn't get around to the iPhone if you think that history kind of stops at 2013 or 2003, right? That's when the mushroom apocalypse starts. I think you'd take whatever you can get. Maybe the higher officers have the Discmans, and the kids get the Walkmans, and you work your way down from there. Somewhere there's still people recycling their vinyl and their 8-tracks. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, but my point wasn't about the technology. The point was about the fact that, you know, going to the theater. We may never recover from that, right? You know, people just may think. You know, like in the same sense that if there were zombies, think about the pandemic as being the zombies or the infected in The Last of Us. There's going to be people who never leave their neighborhood because of that, right?
No.
Because, you know, because it's safe here and I can, if, you know, people take care of that for me and, you know, kind of thing. So I don't have to risk my life to go to a theater. Not that you really are risking your life these days, but when I can sit and watch it on Disney Plus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or Apple TV, right? So.
And the technology's improved so much.
Technology out there, it begins with Net something. I can't remember. I probably screwed up the pronunciation of it anyway.
Netflix.
Netflix. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing that's, I mean, you and I, again, we were just in movies last week, and it's kind of crazy how much things have changed. You know, like it had been a couple of weeks since that movie came out, but. It was not a big crowd, and it was a big theater. Maybe for the first
Quantumania?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was like dead.
Like, maybe there was a bigger crowd the first few weeks when it opened.
Yeah.
Although, judging by the box office receipts, not a lot bigger. I don't know. Like I say, it's really tough. When you give people that experience at home, you've got these great pieces of technology now, these really great, you know, HDR televisions and great surround sound and, you know, Dolby Vision and all these great things to make your experience of home watching better. You know,
I can pause it, I can go to the bathroom, I can go to the kitchen, grab a beer, you know, like, yep. I'm not stuck in my seat having made my decision before I got in there, you know.
But then people like you and I will lament the communal experience, right? That's the part that's missing. And there's been some moves towards that. I mean, you know, there's features on a lot of the platforms now that you and I could watch something simultaneously on any of those channels right now, which is fun and fine, but it's not the same experience as going and sitting together and making, you know, Mystery Science Theater cracks at all the stupid stuff we see in these movies. It's just a very different experience.
Yeah, I don't know. I was added to a Star Trek Slack channel at work today. But listening, like looking at the conversations, there were some people haven't even started watching Andor yet. You know, they're still trying to get through, you know, or they haven't watched, some people haven't watched Picard because they heard season 1, season 2 were so bad. Whereas, you know, like if you're in a theater going mode, you know, there's going to be a large percentage of us that would have gone to the theater every weekend or whatever, right? So
yeah, for sure.
I'm just finding it like, I mean, the world is coming back to normal. I mean, I've noticed that the streetcars are getting more and more busy. It could be that the line I'm on is not the Queen Street line, and the Queen Street line I think is closed down for 2 years. That may be why I'm getting more people on my streetcar, the King Street. But
yeah.
But over the last couple of weeks, I just noticed more and more it's getting more heavily used. But that's a different paradigm, because that's going back to work, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to go back to a theater.
Right? No. Yeah. No. And as you say, user habits are easy to change in their way, right? Look at how fast we all picked up and started watching things on streaming versus the way that we were getting them before. You know, it used to be you'd have to sort of tune in, and then it was, oh, you could get them on home video, and then you could get them on these different formats, and then TV shows were coming on these box sets. And now our habits are, you know, are into the streaming world. It's easy to change user habits, and it's hard to change them back.
It's funny, you know, because you say that, because as you know, you and I both still have cable. And so I have a PVR and I have a whole bunch of shows that I watch on, I'm doing air quotes, on my
PVR. Did you collect on some sort of digital device?
Well, but now what it is like, you know, like I just binged like the last season of Sheldon, Young Sheldon, because I've been too busy watching Apple TV and Disney Plus and that other net something. I can't remember what it's called, but you know, I've been watching Amazon Prime. Can't leave them out. But, I'm just like my PVR is complaining because it's like 75-80% full because I haven't been watching the shows. Right.
So, yeah.
But that said, you know, I a while ago when I got this, I don't know what happened, but I ended up with a new, I ended up changing my settings. It used to delete every 14 days, which forced me to watch, right? But now I did something where I just sort of said, yeah, like leave them until I decide I need room or whatever, right? And so, yeah, shows are just piling up. I've got movies piling up over there that I have to go back and watch and, you know.
Yep.
So it's kind of like there's too much choice, right, to do that. And by the same token, though, yeah, if I could have watched Ant-Man Quantumania at home last week, I would have done that. I had no compelling reason to go to the theater and watch it other than, you know, the fact that it's the only way to watch it right now, right? But
yep. And that's the real angle right now. The only thing that the movie theater can offer you is exclusivity to a point.
Yeah.
And then beyond exclusivity, a different experience because of its scale and scope and the communal experience.
Yeah.
It's easy for people, especially after 3 years of being segregated, it's easy for people to be like, nope, nope, and nope. Like, yeah. I've got enough stuff to last me the 6 weeks or, you know, 8 weeks or 10 weeks or whatever it takes for it to come to an online streaming service. I'm good for the next 10 weeks. Yeah. I'll just not go to certain places on the internet and hope I don't get spoiled. And if I do, you know, when was the last time you were spoiled so badly that you were like, well, I'm not watching that?
What do you mean by that? Oh, yeah.
Like, I can't avoid social media. So I work in social media. Yeah. I can't avoid social media. And yet I've still managed to avoid certain spoilers on things that I care about. Yeah. But even when I do encounter one, I'm not like, oh, that's ruined it for me forever. I'm like, life goes on. You know, that's the price you pay. You have to accept that as the cost of not watching something immediately. And if you accept that, then it's no big deal and you move on with your life.
Yeah, true. But by the same token, though, I've also heard people that say they don't listen to our show because we talk about this and talk about that, or they don't want to get spoiled. They don't want to hear, you know, something or other.
But then listen after the fact. Like, if you're not ready to watch Picard when it's coming out week to week, cool. I happen to know somebody who lives in this house who is not up to date on Picard, but when they sit down and watch a Picard episode, then they go listen to Spotcast.
Oh, yeah.
that works for us. We're fine with that, you know?
Well, that's the point. I mean, like when I joined this channel today, I felt like saying to these guys, you know, like who hadn't watched season one of Picard, well, when you're ready, tune into the podcast.
We've got a lovely little discourse going.
Kick the back catalog going. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We're not taking those down anytime soon. Feel free to go backwards, everyone. If you want to start Discovery ends next year, you can listen to the whole catalog along with it. Just we encourage this.
Or not.
Yeah, maybe don't listen to some of our early episodes.
I do put chapters, so if you want to skip the Discovery stuff, you can just, you know.
There you go.
Get on to the next thing. Cool. All right.
Let's move on. So, next news item.
Speaking of not on Disney Plus.
Not on Disney Plus. Well, I think a lot of people have been waiting for a date for Avatar The Way of Water, or Avatar 2, if you prefer, to come to Disney Plus, because they had been pretty consistently doing about a 6-7 week window that, you know, if you're willing to wait a little bit, this stuff comes out on those channels. Well, Avatar is proving to sort of break that method that they've sort of established. And the fact that it's not coming to Disney Plus, and they're still not coming to Disney Plus. This week they announced that it's coming to major digital platforms for purchase or rent starting March 28th. So that includes Prime Video, Apple TV, Vudu, Movies Anywhere if you're in the States. Lots of stuff. But you cannot get it on any streaming service. It's not available for free on Disney Plus or anywhere else yet, nor is it available for physical media yet.
Is Avatar available? The first Avatar, is it available anywhere on?
It's on Disney Plus.
Oh, Disney Plus. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, they wanted people to I mean, they would have preferred if you went to the theater like we chose to and go see it again in 3D and spend the money and everything else. But they want people to be able to access that so that they are in hopefully enticed to go see the new movie in the theaters. And clearly that worked because it made $2 billion. However, this is a long window. I'm really curious now as to how long they're going to hold this out for, how long they think they can hold this digital window for.
Not the 45 weeks or whatever the Jaime's always going on about, right?
It's 45 days. 45 days is what they've been doing.
Yeah.
So in this case, we've long since blown past that. I mean, it's been out since mid-December. So we're really looking at a long stretch here. And I'll be curious to see how long they think they can hold this window of people who can only, you can only at home if you buy it off of like, you know, Apple TV or something like that. Do they think that lasts for a month? Do they think that lasts for 2 months? I really do. I'm curious when they think that this is going to be the right time for it to land on Disney Plus, but not anytime soon.
Hmm. And it's 20th Century Fox or 20th Century Studios. Is that related to Disney somehow?
Disney bought them.
Oh, okay. That's why. Okay.
They were part of the Fox acquisition that they made a number of years ago. Right. They bought all the Fox assets, including the rights to Avatar.
Yeah, even
the Aliens, Predator.
20th Century used to be 20th Century Fox, right? But
yes. Yeah, okay. But 20th Century Studios. So they bought the studios and all the movie assets and rights, intellectual properties and everything for a mere, I think it was $70 billion, $65
billion.
Cool. Yeah. Hmm. I got that right here.
What's that?
We $65 billion. We could have bought a studio. I don't know what we're doing here.
Oh, with the behind you? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a collection, just easily worth that. All right. Next thing, we had been talking about this as a rumor. It has finally come to pass. The rumor had been that we were going to finally get confirmation that John Bernthal was going to return as the Punisher in the actual MCU as opposed to the adjacent MCU of Netflix. And so we got it this week. John Bernthal himself confirmed that he is returning in Daredevil Born Again, the Disney Plus series that they had previously announced. And good reaction. A lot of people online were like, good, absolutely. The guy nailed the part. He was great at it. It'll be interesting to see if they take a different tack with it, given that that Netflix series was pretty dark. Obviously, I don't think they're going to go as dark with Daredevil, Punisher, any of that world as they did. But it'll be interesting to see how they integrate that into the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe now. Bit of a bummer, though. They did also, they announced the cast list this week, and notably not on it are the actors who play Foggy and Karen. So that's kind of a drag. It does not look like at this point they're going to be in it. Either that doesn't mean that they could
people like, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
It doesn't look like they're going to be in this, you know, 22 part series that they've announced, but that doesn't mean that they're never going to be. I think that's something people have to bear in mind. Just because they haven't been announced for this particular series, that could just mean that they're not necessarily part of the plans in the short term, or it could mean, hey, you know, yeah, we want to streamline things. We don't want to have all these extra characters. We want to do something different. It is a little disappointing. I like those two characters, and I definitely like the performance of those two actors, Eldon Henson, and I'm trying to remember the woman's name. She's really good. But yeah, they were really good, and I'm a little disappointed. But at the same time, you know, we're getting Daredevil in the MCU. We're getting Punisher back in the MCU. We're getting, you know, a good look at this stuff that we enjoyed from the Netflix series. So I don't want to complain too much. I'll let the internet do that for me.
Cool. By the way, just a bit of fact check there. The 2001, October 23rd, 2001 is when the iPod came out.
Oh, here, I thought you were looking up the actors who played.
No, I could do that too, if you like.
Oh, you do that. Well, last thing I got here this week, which I just thought fun. So Keanu Reeves, noted badass who has been in all these amazing roles over the years, who have he's been Neo, he's been John Wick, he's the badass. Well, that has inspired researchers in Germany who have recently discovered these compounds that are fungus killing compounds, and they have named them after Not John Wick, not Neo, but Keanu Reeves himself.
Oh, cool.
So they have called them Keanu Mycens. And the Keanu Mycens are these things that are, you know, super good at killing fungus. And they thought, well, if this thing is that good at killing, it should be named after Keanu Reeves. In response, Keanu Reeves took to Reddit during an AMA last weekend and said, that's pretty cool and surreal for me. Thanks, scientist people.
Thanks, so, scientist people.
Yeah, he's just so Canadian.
What do you want to be remembered for? You want to be remembered for the sad canoe meme, or do you want to be remembered for, you know, like, you know, the sad canoe, sad Keanu meme. He
is that the one where sitting here eating the sandwich?
Yeah, he said he was eating the sandwich.
Yeah, like maybe he just didn't like his sandwich. Leave the guy alone.
Maybe he was just thinking. Exactly.
All right, you've got our actress for us who played Karen Page.
I did. Yeah,
her name is Deborah Ann Wall. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. She was great. She was absolutely great. And again, bittersweet, but you had me at Daredevil.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I still haven't watched that other, but I haven't watched the Punisher series. I don't know what network it's on.
Well, it's anyway. On Disney Plus now. It's on Disney Plus. It's not even on Netflix anymore. It's on Disney Plus now. Oh, look at that.
There you go. See? Those, good things come to those who wait, right?
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, we're at the main part of the show where we talk about something Star Trek related. And this week it is the Picard man.
Star Trek Picard.
And don't help me. I think it's episode 3 or 4. No, episode 4. And it's called
On the Way Home. My Mind.
Not No Way Home, not sinking down the abyss, down the tube, shooting a tube.
I'd like to point out for our viewers at this point and listeners for this point, he has it right in front of him. He's just not looking.
I'm not looking. Oh, no win scenario. Exactly. Well, you why didn't you put my kids? Those are my points. Okay.
Because those are your, I didn't want you to put your stuff at the bottom. I thought that would be mean.
Okay. Well, I thought you would intersperse it, but you know.
I didn't get to that point. I was in a rush. Star Trek Picard, Season 3, Episode 4, No Win Scenario, no hyphen. Grammar Brain is not enjoying that, but I'll be fine.
Oh, because no win is a hyphen? They do work?
It's an adjective. And yeah, anyways. Okay. So, my elevator pitch. If you believe in each other, there's no such thing as a no-win scenario. It also helps if everyone around you is super smart.
Okay.
Yeah. Hmm. Elevator pitch?
I don't know if I had one. It was sort of, I watched it in two pieces. So it's kind of...
Works better as a two-parter?
Well, generally, I mean, I think it was I didn't quite get what Gates McFadden was trying, or character was saying, Dr. Beverly Crusher, what she was saying about, you know, we should do what we always do, which is like, which one of the things that you always do are you talking about, right? Like the, you know, we all get together, we all trust and we love and we have group hugs and we get out of these situations, you know, while the other crews are having, the other shifts are off and in their quarters, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be my elevator pitch. We just kind of like, get the old gang together and do what we do. And, you know, all have blind faith in our fearless leader. Although they couldn't figure out which of the three fearless leaders they were going to follow this week. Four, actually, if you count seven, right? So.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. So, yeah. Interesting show.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. It was a little bit staid. The episode was mostly, you know, they're falling into this gravity well and, you know, trying to figure out, is there a way out or do we just accept our fate? That was really kind of the conundrum this week was, do we accept our fate or do we try and find a way out? You know, Riker was sort of the fatalist in this one. He's accepting his fate. And then Crusher was trying to work the problem. Picard started working the problem. Seven's working a different problem. But everybody sort of had their way of dealing with what was happening. And some of it worked and some of it didn't. The pew-pew-pew came later in the episode when they finally figured out how to MacGuffin their way out of there by using the insert several long scientific words together here and solve the problem. And then they are coming out of this nebula where they're stuck and they are encountering the Shrike. And they, of course, are like, uh-oh, that mean old ship is back. What are we going to do? Conveniently,
no weapons. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Conveniently, the mean old ship had just dropped its like number one weapon with which it completely owned the Titan last week. So,
yeah.
If you can explain the logic of that one, I'm not sure. And then the Titan decides to pick up an asteroid.
Yeah, I can explain that. Yeah, but it's sort of like if you hadn't was this, I guess the first episode or second episode where the Shrek throws a large object at, for the first time ever, I don't know why anybody ever thought about, you know, other than ramming speed, you hear that occasionally, but
yeah,
you know, use the tractor beam to hurl an object or hurl another ship at the Titan, right? So
yeah. So in turn, they decided that turnabout is fair play, and they whip an asteroid at this thing and disable it so they can do their getaway. That was a pretty cool maneuver.
Yeah.
You know, and it even has the punchline, like that first episode, you know, they drew a ship at us. This one is, did you throw an asteroid at them?
Yeah.
And Riker expands on that with an expletive, which we will not say on this show.
Oh, did you? Okay.
The Easter egg hunts, there was lots of good stuff in here. This whole series has been one giant Easter egg because it's a nostalgia fest, right? They reference Encounter at Farpoint, of course, the first episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
You called that a couple of weeks ago, right?
Thank you very much. I did call that a couple of weeks ago, that's probably what was going on. And sure enough, it happened that the Nebula was a living thing. It was going to birth little space babies. Also, when Picard is encountering, he's flashing back and he's encountering those cadets while he's sitting at the bar and he's trying to enjoy his lunch and the cadets are asking him questions. They ask him a question and he's telling them the story about his encounter where he and the alien captain are stranded on the planet together and they have to learn to speak each other's language. So he learns to speak in metaphors, Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
Did you talk about that in the show?
He referenced it because he said it was only our willingness to continue to work together that sort of got us out of it, right? And he's, again, it's about that willingness to never accept defeat. There are no no-win scenarios, right? Mm. So, yeah. So a nice little reference to that one, too. The big question I had this week was, I mean, this episode was kind of what you would have expected in this one. Oh no, we're falling into gravity well. What are we going to do? Well, we're all going to reflect on our lives. We're going to reflect on our decisions. And then we're going to figure out a way out of this thing. And they do. Cool. But the episode ends again with Jack having these weird flashing visions that are calling to him where he hears this voice and he's having these visions in his head. Find me. We'll be together soon. I don't even, I have nothing on that. I'm usually good at figuring stuff out as we've talked about over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years we've been doing this show. I got nothing on that one. I'm going to have to think a little harder or dig a little deeper, but I don't have anything on that one yet.
To me, that was a breadcrumb for a later episode, because if you think about it,
yeah,
this whole nebula, or what do you call this thing? Nebula? Is it a nebula?
Yeah, they're in a nebula, or what they thought was a nebula.
This whole weird nebula thing, that, you know, with this gravity well and everything being pulled in towards it kind of thing. And these strange biometric waves that keep coming at them, you know, they resolved that this week. I was like, once they got out and they ended up hurling the big asteroid at the other ship, I thought, okay, now how many more episodes do we have to go for this? You know, because they seem to resolve that whole sort of arc, right? And then, of course, then when he's in the bathroom having his little, you know, episode, that's when I thought, okay, that makes perfect sense. They're setting up something for future, right?
Yep. So we've still got those threads to follow. We've got Jack's visions. We've got Worf and Raffi and the bigger mystery of what's going on there. The cover up of stealing something from Daystrom Station, which we have speculated could be lore because we know that Brent Spiner is showing up at some point.
Yeah.
And we also have the sort of overarching changeling thing, right? So they did catch the changeling on board the ship and they killed them. We also found in this episode that Vadich is actually also a changeling as well, right? She at one point chops off her hand and then it basically reforms as part of the collective, you know, the Great Link, and starts speaking at her, right?
That was okay, right?
Yeah, I assume that we're meant to think that this is a way that they have of speaking to one another that we just have heretofore not seen. Also, can I just say for the record, and I know that technology's come a long way, so we can do things better now. Mm-hmm. In the 1990s, when we were watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine, the way that the changelings were shown, or the Dominion were shown, was as this sort of viscous goo. Now they look like rotten meat. It's off-putting.
Yeah, but they were like shiny, liquidy gold kind of liquid, right?
Back in the day. Now they look like somebody's beef tartare that they've regurgitated. It is very unpleasant to look at.
This is the thing, is as a seasoned Star Trek watcher, you know, when she cut off her hand, that was the first time we sort of saw this thing morphs up into a face and talks to her.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a weird sort of Emperor Palpatine holograph thing vehicle.
Yeah.
But I mean, the I didn't make the connection that at that point that she was a changeling until when Seven shoots the changeling in the corridor, and it sort of turns into that bigger version of that disgusting, you know, inside. It looked like a transporter accident is what that looked like.
Oh, it was, you know, yeah,
when
absolutely.
When the people came inside out, you know, kind of, that's what it looked like, right? So,
yeah, yeah. No, again, I get that obviously technology's caught up and you can do things, you don't have to do them as rudimentarily as they did 20 years ago, but it's kind of gross.
What was wrong?
It was kind of gross. It was a little gross.
No, I'm just saying, like the old gold, liquidy, mercury, whatever that was fine. I mean, I could have.
I think that's a VFX department showing off, is what that is.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody had to justify their budget, I guess.
Yeah. I had some good quotes, and then there was also some good scenes. So
have we done the Easter eggs yet though?
Yeah, we did the Farpoint and the Darmok and Jalad. Did you have something else you want to throw in there?
The tunic tug.
Good one. Good one.
Yeah, when he sits down in the con, he does the very quick tunic tug.
Yep.
The plumber chair spin.
Yep. Saw that.
Because I wonder if they said, you know, your dad spun his chair when he played General Kang. Maybe you should do that too. And she does the spin. And so the thing that they eject, I froze freeze framed it on it, and I sent it to you.
I saw that. Yeah.
Back earlier today. It actually said Daystrom Institute on it. I think that was the portal weapon, right?
It is, but then there's still that lingering Worf and Raffi. They think that there was also another theft thing going on too, right?
Right. Well, so what I think was happening was that the because she's ordered to go in, and she's ordered to basically commit suicide. They don't care. You got to get this done, or we're going to suicide you anyway, right?
Yeah.
I think that would be the only motivation for ejecting that weapon, because maybe the weapon is too valuable to destroy, right?
I got the impression that it wasn't that. I got the impression it was they would have been too bulky or heavy to be able to get back out if they still had that thing glued to the front of their ship.
Was it glued on the front of the ship?
Yeah, because they spit it out.
I think it was basically showing the Daystrom Easter egg, like I
said. Yeah, maybe. Again, good detail by the VFX team.
Yeah, and those are my Easter eggs too.
Yeah, yeah. The quotes. There were some really, really nice ones in this one. So the one quote was, it's from Riker. Riker, Jonathan Frakes had a really nice speech. That first part where he goes in to apologize to Picard for banishing him from the bridge. Yeah. We knew that had to happen early because
Did he apologize though? I don't know if that was an apology. He was just giving him the news or an update, really.
Well, he was, but he was also, he did say, I'm sorry, but he basically says, like, you know, I'm not wrong. You did actually screw us. But he did also say, you were right about me. He said, you were right. I'm afraid to die now because I'm not convinced that death isn't the end.
Oh, there is anything after that. I see.
Yeah, because he does that whole speech about his son and watching his son be lowered to the ground. Again, Jonathan Frakes, nice speech that he had there, that little monologue. Mm-hmm. And so as part of that, he says, I was running from this only to find it again. This is the end, my friend. I thought that was really a nice sort of summary of that, you know, how lost he is in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Picard, when talking to Jack, when the two of them go to the holodeck bar, and he says, well, let's talk about the elephant in the room. What's up with the hair?
Yeah.
He says, you're what, 23, 24? Enjoy it while it lasts. Yeah. Enjoy it while you can, is what he says. I thought that was hilarious to, you know.
I thought, just for the record, I thought that I had heard that it's your mother's father that passes the gene to you to lose your hair, right?
Yes, I believe that is accepted to be the case.
Yeah. So because I know people whose parents, whose fathers were bald but didn't lose their hair.
Yeah.
Like you and me, but you know.
Well, to be fair, you made it a lot further than I did, but even mine, but like
my dad never lost his hair. And he was he was a few years older than me when he died, right? And he still had a head of hair, right?
Yep. But I keep my hair very trim, very short, just because I don't really think it's worthwhile doing anything else about it. But my grandfather on my mom's side had, you know, pretty thin, but still had some hair. If I grew it out and combed it over like he did, it would probably look very similar at this point. However, my whole father's family line is bald as eagles. So there's mm-hmm. nothing to be done about that, because both sides would have been bald and bald and bald and bald and bald. So right. I have said that to my son more than a few times when he's like, oh, my hair is so thick and luxurious. I'll say, you can absolutely thank your mom's family for that, because it's clearly not coming from your dad's side.
Right.
Yeah. Enjoy while you can. I thought that the speech that that Shaw gives when he goes into the bar, and he's clearly a little knocked up on the painkillers, yeah. but he gives that whole speech about the first time that he met Picard,
right.
and he does the whole piece about how he was at Wolf 359, yeah. he was on the ship, and he talks about the USS Constance and how he basically got randomly picked as one of the 10 survivors of that ship. And, you know, 11,000 Starfleet officers died in those battles. And it's pretty crushing. Great speech by him. And he sort of summarizes it with, you know, Locutus of Borg, the only Borg so deadly they gave him a goddamn name.
Yeah.
That was pretty devastating. Like, that's pretty harsh and pretty bang on. Like, that was a really good line.
Well, you know, because of the Easter egg last week about the connection with the opera, I went back and watched First Contact mm-hmm. this weekend, right? And why am I telling you this?
yeah, no, that's the Borg.
Well, that's the whole episode with the Borg. Oh, yes, no, the Queen, because he, you know, there's a scene where Picard and the Queen are in, I don't know, the warp room or wherever they are, right?
Yeah, engineering, yeah.
Engineering, and because he sort of says, I know you, and she says, well, I am the Collective, and he goes, but, because, I mean, the question is, like, why did the Queen manifest as, like, why did they have to have that character in the story, other than to be the nemesis to both Picard and Data, but, but the, you know, just the sort of that she has sort of a unique identity, even though she says she's the Collective, he says, I know you. And of course, he's Locutus. And it is an interesting question. Why, you know, I guess, like, I mean, you can theorize anything you want, but I mean, like, why would the Borg allow Picard or Locutus to have an identity in that sense?
Yeah.
Other than,
I mean,
be like an emperor or something.
Well, you could make the case that even the Borg as a collective would know that putting him as the front person for that attack is an amazing piece of psychological warfare.
Right.
Like, it puts your adversaries on their heels immediately.
All the strategies, right?
Well, he does, but they would just automatically assimilate that. So they wouldn't even need to put him out front. They would just be able to adapt. But to put him as the face of it, I think, tactically, and if they're a collective and they understand and reason, they would know that if they put Picard as the front person there and we name him Locutus and we show, hey, this is your, like, most famous warrior, and we've basically made him into our slave, and he's now leading the battle, it throws everybody onto their heels. So it's right, good tactics, right?
I think the real reason why the Borg did that is because they realize this is a TV show that we're watching, and they want to do it for the fan service.
Probably that. I think
the Borg are pretty good. You
know? And also, they wanted to put poor Patrick Stewart through hours and hours and hours of makeup to have to wear that.
I noticed that, like, it's interesting because in the image that he has is like a drill bit coming towards his eyeball, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when he was Locutus, they'd never replaced his eye.
No.
There is one of the poor, you know, ensigns or whatever gets his eyeball replaced in the movie.
But, yeah, a few of them get those, like, eyepiece.
Or they have or Data gets drilled on the side of his head for, I don't know why. They didn't put it, did they put it?
Well, because they're replacing the skin. Remember, they were going to give him real skin. He's a real boy. Okay.
Right, yeah. Right. Okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah, I like the turnabout that he still remembers his mission, even though they try to assimilate him. But I guess they can't really. I don't know why they couldn't just reload a new program or something. I don't know. Makes no sense.
Storytelling.
Yeah, you don't have my quote in here, which is to seek out new life.
Yeah. Yep. Well, that's when we see the space babies, right?
Yes, exactly. She just says it in the same way that William Shatner does.
Yep.
As the point of this whole show, like from the 60s, seek out new life.
Mm-hmm.
And then Picard or Riker says, let's boldly get the hell out of here.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. No, it was a good episode. I mean, you know, this one probably the least best, I would say, of the four so far, just because it kind of had to be. It slowed things down. It was really about them connecting with each other. It was about Picard and Jack connecting. It was about, you know, Riker's relationship with Troy. There was a lot of stuff that they had to unpack in here.
Yeah.
And it didn't mean it was a bad episode. It just probably was the least interesting of the one so far.
And the interesting thing is they didn't jump away to the Worf and Raffi storyline like they did last week, which I found, you know, personally, I found that very, you know, disruptive.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, I get that they have to do that. I'm hoping now that we have gotten, you know, we've gotten the group together, right? So we've got Picard and Riker. We've got Seven. We've got Jack and Beverly Crusher all together. We know that Worf's with Raffi. We're still missing the Brent Spiner character, whomever that is. We're still missing Geordi LaForge. We know we're going to see him at some point. And we're still missing Troy, although we've seen Troy multiple times over the season so far in like video screens, but hopefully in physical
form. Zoom calls, basically. Zoom calls, yeah.
Yeah. I still think there's lots of stuff that, you know, again, they're throwing a lot of nostalgia at you. We're still circling back to the first episode. The one thing that we had talked about in there was that, you know, the statue that was out in front, the Red Woman, right? That was the captain of the Enterprise C, the one from yesterday's Enterprise. Was that an Easter egg just to tie into the yesterday's Enterprise, or was that a bigger picture thing? So yeah, there's still a lot of threads to pull together. I hope they can stick the landing, because so far I think this has been by far the strongest of the Picard seasons.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And I feel like if this is the swan song for this whole group of performers who we've enjoyed all this time, you know, I hope they can really nail this last bit, because the first four parts have been lots of fun.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Even my wife sat down and went, "It's Riker," which never happens. Never happens.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they are.
Apparently,
I mean, I gotta
say, her big sister used to hold her hostage to make her watch Star Trek. So
really, oh wow,
hold, yeah,
hold her threatened to put the phaser on kill.
that's right.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I mean, the odd thing about it is, for me though, is both of them are looking pretty old. You know, like, you know, when you think about, like, yeah. I like, if it was a science vessel and they were out doing science, I could see them being making sense that they would still be involved, right? But for a lot of cases in the Star Trek storylines, it's militaristic, you know, and I don't know that they're necessarily, you know, the people that would be in the front lines. It's interesting, just by the same sort of analogy, I noticed more and more as I watch professional hockey that those are children on the ice.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they no longer...
You and I aren't as young as we used to be, sir.
Well, I don't know if it was because back in the day, you know, people would stay in the game longer. But back in the day, it was men playing hockey in my mind. Yeah. Like, that's how I perceived them, you know, cigarettes hanging out of their mouths and all that kind of stuff. No helmets, you know, you know, putting on the tape and that kind of stuff. But but now I look at them and they're all, you know, pretty young, like Xavier and Foster. They're young guys running around on the ice, right? And that makes more sense to me. Like, you know, the people that go to war, people, you know, it's generally like, yeah, you get the Tom Hanks kind of characters, like in Saving Private Ryan, who are like the sergeants or whatever, who sort of rally the men, as it were. But, you know, if you look at any of the movies about, you know, like the Oliver Stone stuff, the Vietnam stuff, the guys that were the sergeants and the rallying the troops were just like older young people.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't like in their 40s or 50s or 60s or 80s, you know.
But it depends too. I mean, I guess the part with Star Trek that you have to sort of carry with you is age is differently perceived in the hundreds of years. If you had gone back and shown them 82-year-old Patrick Stewart 100 years ago as the you know, admiral of leading a ship in a mission, they'd have been like, impossible.
They didn't have 82-year-olds back then. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas, you know, 300 years from now, if you say that this is the status quo, that, you know, somebody works into their 80s, well, sure, that seems perfectly reasonable if the lifespan of human beings is extended, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe that's the math that we don't...
My point is, would you put them on the front line, though?
Who knows? Again, it's hard to say.
Right.
You know, it's quite possible that you don't even go to Starfleet Academy until you're in your 20s or 30s, or who knows? Like, maybe you don't do things at the same pace that we do them now, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Okay.
Should we move on to Mandalorian?
Mandalorian, yes. My elevator pitch was, I don't understand why that show was even put on, but there you go.
That's what I said about last week. I said last week was just that it was basically, in case you didn't watch Book of Boba Fett, here's what happened to Book of Boba Fett. That's what last week's episode. This one at least had some momentum going forward. It was basically, well, my elevator pitch was, with a little help from Din and Grogu, Bo-Katan learns that sometimes you can go home again, right? The whole point was to try and get Bo-Katan into the bigger picture of what's happening on Mandalore.
It was definitely screen time for Katie Sackhoff.
I love Katie Sackhoff. I can't tell you how, like, I smile when I see her wearing that outfit. The fact that they cast her to do the voice all those years ago on Clone Wars
cool. Okay.
He was the voice of Bo-Katan on Clone Wars cartoon. And the fact that they used her voice then was cool. The fact that she is now also continuing to play it in live action makes my heart happy. I love her. I think she's a great performer. I think she's a lot of fun. And just seeing her reclined on the throne in her little castle, and then seeing her, like, you know, Bo-Katan was an awesome character in the cartoons, and I loved seeing her actually get into the action. So that's kind of what I felt like this week's episode was about, was reminding us that Bo-Katan is an important character and that Katie Sackhoff is a badass performer. Yeah. And so I'm willing to go, you know, the whole, like, you know, Grogu has to escape and it's cute. And I get it. I get what they were going for. But really what this episode was for me was bring Bo-Katan closer to the Mandalorian storyline and bring her back to Mandalore, where obviously if you're a fan of the Clone Wars cartoons and even to the Rebels cartoons, you know that there have been these successes and failures for her and her family over the years. And she mentions that in this episode. Mm-hmm. But to get to see her, like, in that scene where she's taking on the spider monster and she picks up the Darksaber and just goes to town. Oh, man, that was awesome. That was so awesome. That was
What I don't understand, though, is why did the first of all, the spider monster capturing, like laying on the sand and sort of capturing Jindaran, but why did they put, why would a robot or droid put Jindaran on a spit?
Well, because it looked like it was draining his spinal fluid.
Oh, is that what it was doing? Oh,
okay. I think that's what it was doing. I never got a clarity on that. I've been trying to avoid, before we do our pods, I try not to sort of look too hard at what other people are speculating, but it didn't look like it was draining his blood. It looked like it was draining his spinal fluid, and maybe that's what it needs for some of its whatever the heck, who knows, because it's a bioorganic creature. Maybe it needs something like that.
Right. Okay.
Again, I think they leave that to your imagination just to be like, oh my God, he's tied up and he's getting something drained out of his body by this horrible thing. But
maybe I liked show at 2 o'clock in the morning. Okay.
I liked the juxtaposition too of when the cave people, which I think she calls Alamites, attack Din earlier on. He is trying to use the Darksaber. He loses his gun and he decides to use the Darksaber and he still can't control it. When he goes to pick it up, it's heavy in his hands. He doesn't know how to wield it properly.
Yeah.
He's fighting it. And they mentioned that in the previous season that he is not used to it. I think it was in the Book of Boba Fett when he tries to use it. It's not really...
It's her family sword.
Well, theoretically... she would have been, well, I mean, the last one to legitimately have it was Sabine Wren, right? And then she handed it to Bo. Bo took it in, that was in Rebels. And then at that point, theoretically, she was supposed to go on to leadership. We know that from watching this series that didn't work out. So the idea is it's kind of like the Elder Wand in Harry Potter, right? You have to defeat the person, or you have to basically take it off somebody in combat. You can't just have it. You have to earn it. But what I'm wondering about this week is, so Din Djarin uses it and he gets defeated by the bioorganic spider guy. Mm-hmm. Then when she goes down to rescue him, she picks up the Darksaber. That is, Bo-Katan picks up the Darksaber and uses it to chop the spider guy into little pieces.
Right.
Does that mean that it's hers now? Because that thing beat Din,
keep it. Exactly.
He beat that thing. Does that mean it's hers now? Because he takes it back at the episode and he sticks it behind his cape. Does that mean it's his? Or does that mean it's hers? Because clearly she knows how to wield it. We saw her pick it up and she's not fighting it. She's using it exactly like you'd use a laser katana. Mm-hmm. And that immediately percolated in my mind. Does that mean that he should be giving it back to her and saying, clearly this is yours? Again, I get your point that this wasn't like the most important episode we've gotten.
Go take a bath. There's always a bigger fish, the whole big fish thing in the water.
Well, there's a lot to that, though. So the big question I had was, is Bo going to be a leader or is Bo going to be a follower, right? Is she going to take what's happened here and is she going to then go back with Din and start following the ways of old Mandalore, like the Death Watch people, the Children of the Watch that he's affiliated with? Or is she going to go on her own path and try and find a different way to unite the Mandalorians?
Well, she had that sort of, kick-ass rebel thing going with the other two ladies that were, she was traveling around with last time when they met Luke Skywalker at the end, right?
Yes. Well, there was that one mission where Din runs into them on the planet, right?
And they were pretty good. And they're all flying around. And Yeah.
But I think the bigger question is, and I've seen this, this one was unavoidable this week. So at the end of the episode, and again, obviously this whole thing is spoilers. I'm going to say spoiler anyways. But the end of the episode, she takes Din down into the mines where he wanted to go. He goes into the quote unquote living waters so that he can be cleansed. And then therefore he can get back in with the Children of the Watch, which is what he wants. Right. He steps into the water, he steps off an edge, and he plummets. And she's like, well, I gotta go save this guy. She goes down and she pulls him back up, and on her way back up she encounters a mythosaur. The mythosaur is that thing that has always been, it's on the shoulder of Boba Fett's armor. It's that insignia, that giant monster. It's the skull of a mythosaur. And from Clone Wars and Rebels and a little bit of the stuff we've heard from this series, we know that the legends foretell that that the return of the Mythosaur will signify a new golden era for Mandalore and the Mandalorians. So even somebody like Bo-Katan, who is very jaded when we first see her at this season, where she's like, you know, I give up. This is stupid. I'm not going to try and do anything anymore. The fact that she sees this Mythosaur in the flesh for herself.
Right. Oh,
I'm really curious to see what this means. So I think if all you take away from this episode is Bo-Katan is awesome, so is Katee Sackhoff, and that Mythosaur can really be a game changer for what happens to the Mandalorians this season, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Okay, cool.
Easter egg, R5-D4. The original R5-D4, the still same
has a bad R5 motivator, hasn't got that motivator fixed yet.
It's still, not the most ideal of the R2, R5 units, the astromech droids. I like Pelly's line, I had that in my quotes, don't be a coward, you're an astromech, act like one. Yeah. But again, fun that she actually calls it out, it is R5-D4, same one we saw from the original 1977
the same Star Wars movie. In the same area where the motivator blows up, yeah.
That's right. And the other quote that I really loved was when Bo-Katan is coming into the Civic Center area on Mandalore and she's there with Grogu and she looks down at the ruins of the city. And again, if you've watched any of the episodes of Clone Wars and you've seen this big, beautiful, sprawling metropolis to see it in these ruins. And she says, this was once a beautiful civilization. My family ruled it all. Now it's a tomb. It's you can feel the pathos. That's she's feeling that, and that was a good delivery of that line too, I thought.
Yep. Cool.
So all things being equal, I think there was some good stuff in this one. It's still slow burn. It's burning, but it's going forward, and I think that's kind of what you want.
The Bad Batch.
Star Wars. The Bad Batch.
Star Wars. The Bad Batch. The Outpost.
Season 2, Episode 12. The Outpost. Yeah. I like these episodes. So far they've done this is the third time in the season that they've done these sort of away from the gang, away from Clone Force 99, away from the Bad Batch, telling a story sort of off to the side. This one focuses in on Crosshair. So we had a previous episode that was Crosshair and Commander Cody, and that's the one where Cody in the end effects. And in this one we come along, so my elevator pitch was good soldiers follow orders until they're pushed too far.
Yeah.
And so we've seen through the first two seasons of this show, and we're coming closer to the end of this season, we've seen that Crosshair was the one who couldn't get over his programming, that
my elevator pitch is Crosshair is a slow learner.
Yeah, absolutely. Bang on. The Clone Force had been saying all along, like, dude, get with the program. This is not what we signed up for. And Crosshair was like, no, good soldiers follow orders. Good soldiers follow orders. We hear the clones say that over and over again. Good soldiers follow orders. And no matter what happens to the clones, the clone troopers within the Empire, now we're seeing them all being decommissioned and treated like, my quote, I think speaks volumes about this. So the one quote was from Lieutenant Nolan, the sort of prim jackass lieutenant who's leading this mission. I don't like used equipment, is what he says when he's talking about going on a mission with the clones. That spoke volumes. Well-written line that really kind of brought home that he didn't see them as equals. He didn't see them. He sees them as essentially about as valuable as a blaster or, you know, a droid, that they are just not real things and they're not reliable. And so no matter how many times this comes up, Crosshair is like, no, good soldiers follow orders, good soldiers follow orders. Well, here he finally reaches his breaking point where he goes on this mission. He's treated like crap. Mm-hmm. He ends up one of the last two surviving clones on this mission. They go, they try and do what they're told, even though it's essentially a suicide mission they get sent on. Go out into the frozen wastelands and track down these raiders who are raiding us, just the two of you, and take them all out. And they do. And they go, and they're successful, and they do this. But unfortunately, it causes an avalanche that in the end basically kills this other last surviving clone. And Crosshair finally hits that broken point when he comes back and he's like, we did this for essentially nothing. We were trying to rescue like pieces of armor for other troops. Like what am I doing here? And, you know, again, Mayday, the troop that he goes on the line has the line, we're good soldiers. We followed orders. And for what? Yeah. And Crosshair takes that to heart and he ends up putting a hole through the commanding officer and good. But then he wakes up, you know, the next day and he's in the clone lab that we've seen in the past few episodes.
Right.
And so now the question becomes, well, what's going to happen with him there? But then we also have that sort of intersection where we sort of see Clone Force 99 and Crosshair's story starting to come together.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, maybe this is the thing. So that was my big question was, is this the thing that finally gets Crosshair back to the Bad Batch?
So what did they do in that, then clone lab? Like what's...
Well, it seems like it's that same arc that we're seeing in Mandalorian, right? It seems mm-hmm. like the idea there is the Emperor wants a cloning project.
Oh.
They wanted to take, you know, all these things going together. Again, they want... In The Mandalorian, they want Grogu because they want his midichlorian count and they want a clone in the future for the last trilogy. They want to clone an Emperor or a Snoke or all of the above.
Right.
And in this case, what they're doing is basically, you know, the start of that whole storyline. I'm curious to see if we finally do see the reconciliation, because it has felt a little weird when Echo left to go off with Rex after that little two-parter. The Bad Batch feels weird. Like just there's just the three main members. There's, you know, there's Hunter and Wrecker and Tech and then Omega. And so yeah, it's just the four of them now. And it feels small. It feels like, because since Echo's gone, it feels like there's an attrition. It feels like something's off. And so it'll be interesting to see if they do bring Crosshair back this season or if that's still
together. Exactly, absolutely.
And he's a cool character. He's really interesting, and mm-hmm. the fact that he finally hit his breaking point this week, I thought was really quite telling.
Yeah, cool.
I like what they're able to wring out of this cartoon. Like, it's not a lesser than just because it's a cartoon. It's a damn good series.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. It's very, very similar to Rebels and Clone Wars in that sense. Good story.
Yeah, there are occasional throwaway episodes that are a little kiddish or cartoonish or you know, just a little less purposeful. But more often than not, these are good, well-told, poignant, and well-performed stories. And yeah, if you're not watching them, you're missing out.
Yeah, cool.
Speaking of things you can't miss out on.
Are we talking about The Last of Us now?
The Last of Us.
Okay. So yeah, The Last of Us season 1 episode 8.
When we are in need.
When we are in need. Oh yes, when we're in need. Yes, that's the David pitch. So mm-hmm. my pitch on this show is this is another boss level. Where no, it is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, no, I know.
And it's it culminates with Ellie trying to get away from David in the restaurant that's burning down, and you know, he's like, join me and together we'll rule the galaxy. Oh no,
that's something else. Yeah
but you know, and she and you as her are trying, because this is part of the story where you are playing as her and you have to figure out how to take him out with, I mean, I think she has a shiv maybe, and that's about it, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's all tough cocktails around too, right? So, if I'm not mistaken, I think there might have been some infected in that restaurant too, because she had to sort of deal with those as well. But at the same time, she can't get out because she has to get past him to get out.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Joel's coming to rescue her as well, right? So,
Yeah, and they captured it. I mean, this was a real spotlight episode for the Ellie character. As you say, Joel's still laid up. He's recovering from the baseball bat wound. And she kind of decides, you know, I'm going to try and draw them away. I'm going to try and sort of, you know, first her instinct is protect him, feed him, keep him alive. And then that leads to this collision with this community. And it sort of goes off the rails from there. My elevator pitch was a little darker than yours. It was horse murder, cannibalism, and child rape. Oh my. This was a dark episode. There was a lot of really grim stuff going on here. You know, they murder the horse that they've been riding around on the last few episodes. Yeah. There's a whole cannibalism arc through this. And David clearly is going to try and rape Ellie at the end of this episode, who we've established as a 14-year-old girl. Like, this is some dark stuff.
Right.
Really, really great performances throughout. I thought the actor who played David was great. I thought that the actress that plays Ellie was great. I thought there was just a lot to like about this episode, but it went to some dark places, and this is going to feed through my whole themes here. You know, the pew, 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 you're right. That whole boss fight between Ellie and David while the building's burning, and, you know, he's trying to sort of decide whether he wants to adopt her, rape her, or kill her is really weird.
Yeah, and he basically wants to make her one of his women kind of thing. I got that whole sort of you know, cult leader. I thought when they were all sitting in the restaurant in the beginning, when he's doing his little talk to the group, I thought he was going to bring out a tray of Kool-Aid and they're all going to, like, you know.
And honestly, if it hadn't culminated the way this episode did, it might have eventually, right? You know, we establish in this one that he's not above making some really dark choices for this group that he is suddenly sort of finds himself leader. And I thought this really worked as a companion to the episode from two episodes ago when they arrive in Tommy's hometown there. Yeah, and all of a sudden there's this, like, idyllic community where they've got things figured out. They're working together. They explain that they're going by the rule of law, and they're also communists, so they're working together and sharing everything. Well, here we get the opposite side of that, which is it's the rule of God and the rule of one man. So it's an autocracy, and it's also, you know, it's a theocracy, because he's basically doing it under the auspice of being a worshiper of God, although we find through this episode he's not.
Right, yeah.
And then on top of that, you know, we see how far people go when they're the have-nots, right? So when we were in, you know, the town with Tommy and his family, we see that, you know, they've got food to share. They're able to sort of work together and do these things. Here, it's a long winter and it's gone bad. And what do you do when there's no game and all this stuff? Well, it turns out you turn to cannibalism. So, so this led into one of my big questions for this episode, which is, so there's a scene where they show up with a box full of meat and they basically throw it into with the tomato sauce, and they're making, you know, tomato stuff, and he's like, yeah, more deer for you. We established that basically at the beginning of the episode, this little girl and her mom are mourning because their dad/husband have been killed, and then we figure out through the course of this episode that's the person that Joel killed, that stabbed him with the baseball bat in two episodes ago, right? That's the person who did this,
right?
And that's why they're coming to kill Joel, and that's why they're mad at Ellie. The rest of them, other than David, want to kill them, right? Or want to kill her. So he says early in the episode, David, that is, says, we'll bury your dad in the spring. The ground's too hard. We'll bury him in the spring. But of course, we know that what's happening is they got his body back and they've been carving off pieces of it and eating it because they're starving to death.
Yeah.
So big question. How likely is it that little girl and her mom are eating the dad and husband?
Oh, 100%.
100%, right?
100%.
Which is really gross. Like that, I mean, beyond cannibalism abstractly, that's specific cannibalism. Well, that's like, boy, no. Dad was good, you know?
Yeah, the lieutenants know. I mean, like, they're you know, they're like, are we doing it the same way as before? And that kind of thing. There's an interesting thing that I want to talk about the game for a minute, too, because I can't remember if it was this scene or this part of the game or whatever, but there's a point where you're playing as Joel, and he's either drunk or he's been drugged. Or it may be that he's not quite recovered, because your vision is blurred, right? You're staggering around, you know, you're using the controller, and yet, you know, the control is almost like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, when they say you're not drinking and drive because you're impaired, you're literally impaired. because of the character state in playing this game. And it doesn't matter what you do as a conscious person, you cannot control this guy effectively. And at the same time, as he's going to the restaurant, he's taking out all the people on the way there. You're being stealthy, and you're doing it, and so, but it's a really effective part of the game where you're incapacitated, and yet you still have to get to, because you don't know in the story as it's unfolding in the game that you're not what's going to rescue Ellie. Ellie's going to rescue herself. You do at the end of, when in the restaurant, when you know Joe kind of comes through the door, and you know they let's get on the horse, and not that they have a horse, but
it's going to say, get on my shoulder, let's go. Yeah, it's funny. And that's the part of the episode that was a little far-fetched, is Joel is, at the beginning of this episode, is really suffering. He's in bad shape. Ellie goes hunting. She takes down this deer, elk, large, you know, cloven-foot animal. And that's, you know, when it falls, that's when she runs into David and James, his assistant or lieutenant. And that is how they basically encounter one another. And she says, I'll make you a deal. I won't kill you. I'll give you half of this animal. If you get me medicine, I want medicine.
Yeah.
And they, of course, figure out, okay, well, this is clearly the two people who encountered the other person and who killed them. And they, you know, so it all goes from there. And then she goes back and she starts, you know, she doesn't know how to administer you know, medicine to him, and she's jamming the needles right into his wound, and he hasn't eaten. He's just sort of drinking a little bit of snow water, but having, despite not having eaten for days, been laid up, having this serious injury, he, when he realizes there's somebody in the house, has enough like wherewithal to like get up and then murder that person. So stab them, stabs that guy, goes upstairs, takes out two more guys, tortures one of them, is lucid enough to do that, kills the other one, and then goes and discovers the bodies, and then goes into town to try and save her. All while theoretically he was just, he's like, he's dehydrated,
feverish,
all that stuff. As you say, the game, it makes much more sense if he is kind of doing this. Here we don't really get that conveyed, and that part, I think, kind of...
It's a really good recovery,
Yeah, it just felt like somebody had just given him a health pack from a video game. It felt a little video gamey, which I didn't like as much. But because Bella Ramsey was killing it as Ellie in this episode, you kind of don't care. Like, she was killing it. She was so good in this episode. So, you know, that kind of made up for a little bit of far-fetched Joel miraculously being able to... it's going to take the guy's kneecap off.
Well, the dialogue with her in the cave or in the cage, that's
most of the game.
Yeah, exactly. Have you gotten that part of the game yet or no?
No, I haven't had a chance to play much the last couple of weeks. It's been a bit of a bad stretch for me as far as spare time, but I'm hoping over the next couple of weeks I'll be able to get to it. I was really hoping to be able to get to the end of the game before the end of the show, but there's really no world in which that's going to happen. So
We only got one more episode left.
One more, and we're done. Great quotes in this episode. You know, they chose to follow you. Is that some weird cult thing when Ellie's first talking with David? And she's right. It's 100% a cult thing. And he pretty much confesses, like, I didn't believe in God before this all started. And now he basically has weaponized God against these people. You know, that's pretty bang on. The part where Joel jams the knife into the one guy's knee and basically says, you know, I'm going to put this knife in your mouth. You're going to point at the map. I'm going to ask your buddy the same thing. If you guys do things differently, I'm going to torture you even worse. And then he basically says to the first guy, you know, like, okay, I believe you. And he kills them both pretty cold-bloodedly. That is some dark stuff too. And it's funny because the line, and the next one I had is David talking to Ellie. He says, you have a violent heart, and I should know, I've always had a violent heart. And it's not just her. It's her and Joel both. That's how you realize they are the same sides of the coin. They're not lone wolf and cub. They are wolves. Both of them are wolves.
I think in this pandemic society that these people are in, is post-apocalyptic society, not pandemic. You have to be like that. You and I are dead in that society.
Like, we're speak for yourself.
You know, we're dinner. Like, you and I are getting served up on a platter. Like, you know, like, it's funny. Like, Tammy, my friend, you know, who does the podcast, she always jokes about the fact she's building a zombie army. And half of us, she says, are you bait? You know, we'll put you up front.
Yes, I believe when I that podcast, she said I would be toast pretty fast, which is unfortunate. She asked for what my skills could be, and I'm like, I could write your story. She's like, you go to the front of the line. And
yeah, exactly. You go get the water.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, and the line that that Ellie has as well, which is straight lifted from the game, I'm told, is you know, tell them Ellie is the little girl who broke your effing finger, effing right? Finger, that's straight out of the game.
Yeah, right. And and actually, the part where Joel is questioning the two guys, and he says, I want you to point to the same spot. That's also in the game, and his solution to that situation is also in the game. I'd forgotten it at the time I was watching it, but once I realized, you know, when the other guy says to him, you don't have to do this, you don't have to, I knew what was coming because I hadn't played the game. It is pretty, it's a pretty dark game. I mean, you know, it's funny.
Yeah, well, and that's what kind of kept me away from playing it. I've had it for years. It came as a free download for me years ago, and I knew it was great. I played the Uncharted games. I've spoken to the people at Naughty Dog over the years when I used to cover gaming. I knew it was a great game. It's just, I was a little leery about, like, I've played the Resident Evils. I played some dark games over the years, and I am not good with those games. They stick with me. And you know what? The show's probably going to stick with me for a while too, but it's great. It's really good.
But it is interesting. Is Red Dead Redemption from Naughty Dog too?
No, that's Rockstar.
Rockstar. But like, I'm actually surprised at, you know, the swearing and, I mean, the violence in the games. I mean, because, you know, I was talking about this at work the other day that, you know, you can play the game for a couple of hours and then, like, then you have to go out and be civil.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like you just spent the, I mean, for, you know, I tend to play these games sort of like, you know, as I would, and I'm a sort of nice guy and kind of stuff like that. And I end up dead all the time for that. Right. You know, but I mean, like, but when you get into the sort of, you can get away with stuff in the game kind of thing, because you just go pay your bounty and you're, and you know, it's like going to church and making confession, right? All is forgiven. Right.
Yeah.
A little bit of cash goes a long way in those kind of societies, but the, it changes your psyche, like, you know, in terms of, like, I'm sure, you know, I do see it potentially having a negative effect on people and how they would behave in proper society, right?
Well, and that's, I think that people had a problem with those Grand Theft Auto style games, right? Where you have the choice to be a bad person. People are like, well, I was a bad person and I was rewarded for it. Therefore, why wouldn't that apply in real life?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure that it's strictly true across the board, but it's certainly, if you were somebody who was more easily influenced, it could influence you. I remember you specifically saying a number of years ago that playing Gran Turismo affected the way you drove your car.
It does.
So, you know.
But I mean, only because they teach you skills that you don't learn in driver's ed, right?
Yeah.
Like about how to take a corner and how to accelerate out of a corner and that kind of stuff.
You know how to skin a deer and ride a horse and customize a Colt pistol.
Not really. I do find that the horses are a bit like our dogs. Like, they'll follow you anywhere and they'll do anything you say, but unless you scare them and then they run away.
Sorry, which one of our three dogs does that?
Mine.
Yeah. Mine. Not mine. They're not so good at the listening.
Yeah.
I'm working on it.
No, I don't. That's what I mean. Like, horses don't listen too, but I mean, like, yeah.
Mm.
Like, I found, like, you know, if you're coming up on a horse that belongs to an enemy, like, the foolish thing to do is try and check the saddlebags, because 9 times out of 10, it's going to hit you. It's going to kick you. Right. So what I do is I just get on the horse and win it over, like, and ride it around for, like, you know, 5 minutes and brush it and give it an apple and it's yours. Mm. Right. That doesn't happen in real life.
It would probably work on all three of our dogs, though.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You petted it and you give it an apple, it's probably yours.
Feed it.
Yeah, sure. Two more things for Last of Us before we wrap up. So the Easter egg that I had was that James, the lieutenant, was played by Troy Baker. Troy Baker was Joel, the motion capture actor and voice of Joel in the video games.
Cool. All right, cool.
So there you go. I didn't know that. That was just all over social media this week, so I saw that one pop up. The other one was a question. So the first question was, how likely is it that the girl and her mom are eating the dad? 100%. The other one was, so they're in this community. It didn't look like it was nighttime, because when Ellie comes out of there and reunites with Joel, it's daytime.
Yeah.
This mess hall, this restaurant that they're in, where they all commune and eat and seems to be where they gather. It's like the town square, town center.
Yeah.
The whole thing's going up in flames. It's a small town. Nobody comes.
Nobody notice. Nobody brings a bucket.
Nobody
of water.
Comes.
Yeah.
Nobody at all. Like, Okay.
Yeah.
We'll leave that one out there, but that one just that was my first immediate like, wait a minute. That seems a little far fetched.
Well, in the game, at the same time as Ellie's having this battle with David, you're Joel and you're taking out all the
Which would make more sense, but they don't cover that here in the show. So it is a bit of a leap of like, so the two of them just walk out into the town square and they're like, hey, we're together, let's get out of here. Nobody's around, nobody at all. Like those people did have guns.
But in the show, there's like five guys looking for Ellie, right? In the game, there's 35 guys.
Of course. You need cannon fodder in a good video game, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You need to make it difficult. Yeah, for sure.
So you finished the game. Do you feel like this is gonna line up as far as ending with Last of Us Part One game, as far as where they're at right now?
Yeah.
Do you think people are going to be happy, sad, or otherwise?
They're not going to like the ending.
Yeah, I saw Bella Ramsey quoted this week, and she said people are going to be widely divided over the ending.
Yeah, because the game sets up. I mean, it doesn't quite set a Last of Us 2, but it in a sense it does.
Right.
Right.
All right. No spoilers, but yeah, like I'm really curious to see how they land this first season and how that correlates to the show. So we'll talk about that obviously next week. But I think it's going to be interesting to see if they can conclude this first season. It's been hot. The show is hot. People are watching it. People are talking about it. I wonder if it's going to end in a place where people are going to be like talking about it until the next season, or if it's going to end in a place where people are like, F that show, I don't want to watch it anymore.
Well, it's kind of funny, like the Uncharted game, the Uncharted series. We played four versions of that game, like three or four versions. There's like Uncharted 3, and then there's the mission with the two bad people, or the two ladies.
I think there's a four. I think there's four plus that. Yeah.
But that one is like there's a treasure hunt at the beginning in the first episode, and that's what the movie that you see is that treasure hunt, and then with a little less explanation, but anyway, and then the next game is the same characters but a new mission, right? Maybe I should stop talking. I haven't played
no Last of Us 2. Spoilers.
I haven't played Last of Us 2 yet, but I don't know what like you know, when you have a second game, it has to have, there has to be a reason why you're going to go on this Star Trek with these two characters, right?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Well, we'll check in next week. We're going to be to our last episode, and I think everyone's pretty excited to see how it goes, and hopefully it'd be nice to have the two of them back together, because the last few episodes have been very less Joel-centric, obviously.
Yep. All right, let's move on to our watch list. I got a couple here. One, as I've told people before, and you know this yourself, as I'm a huge Terry Gilliam fan. You know, I love it. I think I've seen just about every one of his movies, except maybe one or two, but like early ones. But this lists claims to be the nine best films by Terry Gilliam, of which many people would know them. And they kind of go in order. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is like in number nine position. I would actually change a couple of them around. The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, which was a weird one because it's supposed to star Heath Ledger, who died during the making of it. So it goes on this really sort of twisty. They had other actors come in and play the same role, and that wasn't quite as effective. So I don't know if I would even, again, I don't know if I would watch this movie again. And then The Man Who Killed Don Quixote was the film that came out 2 years ago, and it was pretty good. It was interesting. It was interesting because it mixed. Have you seen it yet?
Nope.
Because it mixes, you know, the sort of like it's Don Quixote chasing the dragon. It mixes the mythical perception with the actual what's really happening perception, and it's really well done that way. So Adam Driver and actor from.
Oh, it's Jonathan Pryce, isn't it?
Jonathan Pryce, who's from my favorite movie, Brazil, right? So, and then, you know, Fisher King, which is a good one. That was another, that was Jeff Bridges and Robin Williams and the lady, I can't remember her name. Anyway, really, really good actress in that movie as a female one. 12 Monkeys, probably my favorite. One of my, if not, I mean, it's a pretty high movie. It's like one of my five-star movies, you know?
Yeah.
Great performances by everybody in that one. Time Bandits, of course, that's like
classic. You know,
yeah, that could almost be number one for me. Adventures of Baron Munchausen, I would move that down to fifth position instead of third.
Yeah. Right?
because and of course that, you know, you can watch a small child being tortured by the director, and that one
That one stings a little bit because we as Canadians love Sarah Polley, and poor little Sarah hated that experience so much. Hated that experience so much. It's awfully hard to watch that now and be objective.
Yeah. And so they have Brazil number two in position number two, which is, Brazil is a great movie. I've got several copies of it. I've seen it 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. And Monty Python and the Holy Grail, which technically was actually a
co-director.
Co-director. It wasn't his exclusive. And it was also written by the Monty Python gang, right? So,
yeah. So not strictly speaking. Yeah. I feel like that was a bit of a cheat. Like, yes, of course, he was very, very much a part of it, but it wasn't just him.
Yeah, it's not his specific movie, but yeah. But
my two favorites probably are Fisher King and 12 Monkeys are both really excellent movies. Yeah. They're probably his two most accessible movies.
Yeah.
The rest of them are a little out there. The other one that isn't on this list that I know not everybody loves it, but I like Zero Theorem. I thought Zero Theorem was interesting.
That was good. Yeah, no, you're right. I like that one too. Yeah,
I thought, you know, Christoph
Waltz. One of these movies for sure for that.
Yeah, like I don't know that I put it in like, you know, the top five, but top 10 for sure, for sure. Yeah, like, yeah. You know, I like Time Bandits more. There's certainly other ones, but I thought Zero Theorem was pretty tight. Really interesting look to it. Very much a Gilliam film. But again, I get it. Like, he makes weird movies, and they're not for everybody. They're just not. So, but yeah, I thought Fisher King is such a great performance from Robin Williams, and it's such a good movie.
So we have a TIFF here, which is the Toronto International Film. I don't know what it's
Festival.
Yeah, but they have a TIFF Lightbox here. Bell Lightbox is called, and it's where the TIFF headquarters is. But you know, I've seen lots of movies there. We got to see Brazil on the large screen, and we got to see Time Bandits on the large screen. I've never seen Time Bandits in the big you know, or Brazil, but both movies are great to watch there as well. So I have seen all of these movies. No, I haven't seen Fisher King on the big screen, but I've seen all of these other movies on the big screen for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And he makes, again, interesting films, always interesting films, very visually interesting. Zero Theorem is like, you could watch that movie 25 times and pick up different stuff. There's so much happening.
Yeah. Yeah. So my second pick is kind of around, there's that service that I'm going to mess up the name. It's Netflix, I think.
Netflix, you say?
Netflix. Yeah. Something, it was like a DVD rental service. I'm kind of bananas, whatever. But anyway, so a friend of mine was telling me about this service that he uses called Flickstore.to, or it's a bunch of different names, but Flickstore.to. It may or may not be legit. But let's call it a streaming service out of Vietnam. Let's just say it that, right? I think the fact that TOR, as in the Tor browser, the Onion browser, is kind of in the name, you know, you can pretty much go and watch just about any movie that you would want to stream on this service, I'm told. I've not been able to get connected myself. But if you do pay for the service, like if you become a VIP member and pay $15 a month or whatever, you can watch just about anything you can watch on all of the other things. Maybe like you won't get Mandalorian today when it comes out, you'll get it tomorrow kind of thing. So yeah, it's an interesting way to deal with the Lopez calculation, I think, you know?
That being said, I'm just looking at it with the link that you provided here.
Yeah.
And the new episode of The Mandalorian is available on this service.
Oh, you're able to connect to it right away? Because when I looked at it on my phone yesterday, it kind of said, you know, come back later when there's less people online, you know? So
yeah, maybe I've got a good time of night for it to be on or something. But yeah, I mean, there's content here from Amazon Prime. There's content from Disney Plus. There's content from Netflix. There's content from Comedy Central. It's very much, this is HBO. This is pretty much a Pirate's Wonderland is what this is.
Yeah, yeah. Arg.
Use at your own discretion, kids.
Yeah, exactly. Turn on the VPN for sure.
Make sure the VPN is on. Yes.
Yeah. Please do that. Yeah, and I saw something earlier today. Somebody was talking about a hack on the Netflix where you can't, if you don't want to pay for it, there's a way to, on Linux, there's a way to say that you're like do a backup of it, or and it'll actually end up downloading the file to your Linux box, and then you can accidentally watch it.
Oops.
So there are ways around these things. But yeah, interesting that this service is available and you can pay for it and enjoy it. So your mileage may vary.
We do not endorse lawyers. This.
We're just providing it as a service, you know.
We are an information generation. Exactly. We are just relaying that information to you.
Exactly.
All right. I have a couple of things for the watch list this week. The first one is one I mentioned last week that I would be watching, History of the World Part 2. This is on Hulu in the United States. It's here on Disney Plus through Star here in Canada. And it's an interesting format. They divided it up into half-hour episodes as opposed to one long movie. Mm-hmm. And it was airing multiple days this week. So I think all in, it's quite long if you add it all in. I think it's 4 hours plus.
So is all of it out now? Or because I thought it was like a weekly thing. Oh, okay.
No, they basically were doing two episodes a day every day from Monday to Thursday this week. Okay. So there are 8 episodes in all. You got 2 a night for 4 nights. Interesting way to sort of roll that out. Probably an interesting experiment as far as like doing a mini series over the course of a few days as opposed to weeks. It does probably fall into that Netflix window of people won't be talking about this 2 weeks from now, but as far as like an event and something you could follow for a few days in a row, it's kind of fun. I have watched more than half of it. I have not had time this week on top of the 4 things we just talked about and all the other mm-hmm. stuff. I haven't had time to watch all of it, but what I have watched made me laugh very, very hard. It's certainly not all-inclusive family friendly, but definitely a mix of Mel Brooks humor. If you're a fan of the classic Mel Brooks humor, definitely a lot of other talented people working on it. Not the least of which is Nick Kroll. Nick Kroll's in a lot of it. Clearly it has his sense of humor. If you're a fan of Big Mouth or some of the things that he's worked on, you will definitely, or the Kroll Show, you'll definitely pick up his sense of humor through this. Ike Barinholtz is in a bunch of it. Wanda Sykes is in a bunch of it. And just guest stars galore, Jack Black so many other great.
So how does it compare to the part one movie? Like, is it?
It's pretty similar in that there is both these little sort of shorter 2-3 minute vignettes, and then there's sort of a arc of certain things that sort of carry through,
like running
the whole thing.
Kind of things, or...
Well, no, more like running, like recurring themes and characters, right? So they spend more time in this show on the Russian Revolution, because obviously there's a lot of Jewish people involved in the Russian Revolution, as also there's a lot of rich storytelling content in there. So they've been focused on that. So that has woven through multiple episodes. There's a whole woven storyline about the US Civil War that's woven through all the episodes. But then there's also like 2 and 3 minute just bits and gags and stuff like that that are, you know, hilariously funny, but are just like a throwaway, you know, 3 minute skit, something that's smaller. And that's very much tone wise and sort of construction wise, very similar to mm-hmm. the original 1981 movie. Yeah, I think it's a good time. So far, I'm enjoying it. I haven't obviously gotten to the end of it, but if you're a fan of that sense of humor, it's definitely going to make you happy. Mel does an introduction at the beginning, and then he introduces each of the segments and stuff like that. So it does have Mel Brooks' fingerprints on it, even though obviously he's a man of quite advanced years. He's in his mid-90s now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's fun to see. And they did actually carry forward the skits that they teased at the end of History of the World Part 1. If you're familiar with the movie, at the very end, he says, "Coming soon, History of the World Part 2. And he says, "We'll have these bits." And one of them is Hitler on ice. They do a Hitler on ice bit. One of them is Jews in space. They do a Jews in space bit. So, you know, it's definitely both an interesting little bit of nostalgia and also just a bunch of really funny people doing funny stuff and just being goofy. So, yeah, if you're into that, highly recommend.
Well, if you've never sort of gone into the Mel Brooks catalog, I mean, he used to do these things with Carl Reiner where he was like the world's oldest man.
Yes.
And he was like a caveman in the early days, and talking about, you know, yeah, how he, you know, invented
10,000-year-old man.
Yeah, 1,000-year-old man, yeah. And then he did and then he was like going up into space and all kinds of stuff. And that, to me, when History of the World Part 1 came out, it's very much in that same sort of sentiment, those sort of long story gags, right, sort of thing, right?
Oh, it's some of it is clearly like stream of consciousness craziness. I mean, yeah, you know, the original movie has, you know, not only does it have Mel Brooks as the lead, but it's got Sid Caesar, it's got like all these incredible like 1950s, 40s, 50s, 60s comedians and stuff in it. It's just, it's so, And it's just so stupid at times. At one point, when they're doing a bit set in ancient Rome, this guy walks by and he's supposed to be Oedipus. And of course, if you know anything about psychology, the whole story of Oedipus with, you know, wanting to have sex with his mother and kill his father. At one point he walks by and Gregory Hines is one of the main characters in that. And he walks by and he goes, "Hey, mother effer," which is just the funniest throwaway line. But every time I've seen that movie 20 times, every time I see it, I laugh out loud. That line and the delivery of just seeing Oedipus and calling him a mother effer just kills me every time. Just kills me.
Right. Yeah.
So, again, if that's your cup of tea, if that's your sense of humor, enjoy.
Yeah. Cool.
The other thing that I thought we could recap just briefly for our watch list, you and I went and saw Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania last week. Mm-hmm. And this is the latest MCU movie. Obviously, it's got sort of mixed reviews. People are saying, well, it's, you know, a much ado about nothing, doesn't really kind of advance the MCU plot overall. I thought it was fine. I thought it was enjoyable. Yeah, it was a good couple hours. It was not, I would say, in the top tier of the Marvel movies. It's certainly not Civil War or Winter Soldier or, you know, Endgame. It's not going to, you know, be the first thing you pick out of the catalog. But if you're looking for just 2 hours of, you know, completely oddball sort of, you know, science fiction, it's fine. Paul Rudd's likable. Michelle Pfeiffer's great. And also still incredibly beautiful. I think it's perfectly fine. I get people's complaints that it's not really substantial. Like, there's not a lot that comes out of it. The only thing you really get out of it is that Jonathan Majors as Kang is great. Mm-hmm. He is probably the strongest part of the whole thing. And if he's going to be the linchpin that they build this whole next stage of the Marvel Cinematic Universe around, I think that's fine. I think he's got chops. I think he's a really good performer. I think he's got charisma. Mm-hmm. And I think, in a way, he's more effective than the Thanos character just because he's a real person. You see his face, he emotes. He's much more, he's just much more able to do things in a way that the CGI of Thanos wasn't. So I kind of like that a lot.
He sort of has a menacing-y, like, you know, saccharine kind of, like, sometimes he just seems like a normal guy, but you really know that you find out quickly that there is an undercurrent. And I think he kind of, like, you and I walked out of it thinking, you know, a bit of a spoiler, I guess, that there are other incarnations of him. Is he really the bad one, right?
Or is he really
the worst one, right? So, and what?
The same way we got that out of the Loki series, right? Because we saw an iteration of him in that one, and now we're seeing a different version, and we know there's more and more and more of him throughout time, right?
Him, them. And the other thing too is, like, I was explaining to Carol, and I had it sort of, to me, it was like Dr. Seuss with ants. Like, it was.
Yeah.
The thing about it is, I think that may be why, if it's unapproachable by the masses, it's probably because there's a lot of weird stuff in it.
It's like, weird. You know, it's weird. Yeah. It's undoubtedly weird.
Yeah, it's got some sort of twisty, you know, hallucinogenic kind of characters that are, like, just, you know.
Hey, that's what we should have brought instead of popcorn.
Yeah.
A little bit of hallucinogenics would have made that sing.
Wow. Yeah, that's true. That's true. But yeah, it is very trippy, and there's some interesting characters, and it's funny in a lot of different ways too. Like, drink the goo.
Drink
if
the
only
goo,
we could all drink the goo, right? I did like the sort of Michael Douglas arc in it, in terms of solving the problem, right? That was, mm-hmm. I mean, that made a lot of sense, you know. And then with the sort of the Ant-Man solution, when the Ant-Man sort of uses the same sort of idea as ants do to kind of climb up that, you know, unreachable thing, right? That was kind of very similar to what actual ants would do in the wild, right? So, cool.
The only other thing I wanted to add, and I'll put it into our notes afterwards, they did drop the trailer this week for the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie called Mayhem. Mm-hmm. I really like the look of that. It looks very much like the style that we saw for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. It's got that sort of slightly stop motion, but digitally animated kind of feel to it. It's got texture. Mm-hmm. Interesting cast. Seth Rogen is sort of the brains behind it. I haven't watched a Turtles movie since the original Turtles movies, but I got to admit, when I saw this, I was like, yeah, I totally watched that.
Not a bunch of guys in rubber suits kind of thing?
No, it's a cartoon. That the original was the ones in rubber suits. I actually enjoyed the first one. I don't think I ever saw the third one, but I would definitely watch this one. This looked really good. I think this is a nice way to take it. I didn't really like the weird, slightly more menacing versions in the rubber suits they did maybe mm-hmm. 4 or 5 years ago. That really was not something that I was interested in, but this looks good.
Oh, they mean they went back and redid the rubber suit guys? Oh, okay.
They did, but they made them like, you know, 18 feet badass. Tall and like, you know, swole. It's like, no, I'm okay.
Okay. Cool.
But yeah, no, it's good. I'll throw the trailer into our show notes. If you haven't seen it yet, fans out there, please have a look. It's good.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I guess that's it for another week. So Jonathan, people can get in touch with you. Where would they find you?
Well, since we're on YouTube, I'll start there. If you're on YouTube, you can find me at youtube.com/@JPK. That's where my channel is. Or you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. It's @JPKnews.
Yes.
What about Jaime? What if you want to find Jaime?
Well, I think he's somewhere in Japan right now.
He's in Japan.
Yokohama. He's buying tires for his car in Yokohama.
That's what he's doing. It's cheaper if you go over there and you get them and you bring them back.
Yeah, you can make sure you get the right kind of rubber as opposed to the stuff you just get at the stores. Yeah. If you're going to get tires, go to Yokohama and get them directly there.
But if you want to ask him questions about being in Yokohama,
you could probably ask him by looking up for Dev with the Hair on Twitter.
@DevWithTheHair on Twitter.
Not on Mastodon, strangely enough. He's waiting. He's waiting to see. He's playing a wait and see game with Mastodon. That's what he tells me anyway. My name is Timitra, TIMMITR, and Twitcher Machine. Don't forget to buttons over here, like and subscribe. Here on YouTube, obviously, if you're seeing me here, that's okay. I'm right here. This is me. Yeah, also on Mastodon, same handle on Mastodon. Try to have the same handle everywhere.
Feel free to join us on our Slack channel. We are always happy to see you there.
Yeah, you gotta. There's a form on the More Than Just Code website that you gotta click on, and I will check it because I occasionally get spam. But yeah, what are you gonna do? Yeah, we had lots of fun. Oh, speaking of which, we were supposed to talk about. There was one of our fans from the show, David was, yeah, I was going to say David. I don't know why I didn't say that earlier. David Price was saying that he's bothered about the Bad Batch where they mentioned Crosshair's name is CT and then 4 digits or 5 digits, right? Well, that's only enough for 10,000 clones if you go by that logic, right? So unless they change the CT part.
Well, CT's clone trooper, right?
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
Do they recycle the numbers when they die?
I don't know. Maybe they just stamp them on them. And that's another thing too, is in First Contact, you actually hear Picard uses the same password he used in a couple of episodes ago. So Jaime's right. He's been guilty of using the same password for like 20 years. So that, you know, Picard, Tanga, Alpha, whatever it was, right? So fact check for next week.
We do it to ourselves.
Anyway, yeah. See you in the future. Take it away, Mike. Mike's going to talk now.
You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.